Hi, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. We're talking with Dr. Chen and Dr. Pham about cohort studies. Hi, Dr. Chen. Hi, Dr. Pham.
So my name is Hui Pham. I am currently the assistant professor in transfusion medicine in the Department of Pathology at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And in the past, we have discussed with you about the features of a randomized control trial, as well as a classical case control study in order to provide evidence for clinical practice. Today, with Dr. Chen, who is a statistician in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Columbia University College of Physician Associates and the New York Presbyterian Hospital, we are going to talk about another study design, namely the cohort study design, and its advantage and disadvantage.
Hi there. We're going to cover the basics of a cohort study design in this podcast.
So specifically, the outline of the podcast is that I will go over the basic design of a cohort study. And Dr. Ling Chen will go over with you the statistical analysis portion and the conclusion that you can infer validly from a cohort study. At the end of the podcast, we will give you a basic short summary of the cohort study, and probably we will give you some of the differences between this design and the case control design that we discussed previously in the past, as well as the randomized control trial.
Okay, so let's start with the definition. Dr. Pham, what's a cohort study?
The cohort study is part of an observational study. Usually it's a prospective study. Classically, it's a study in which the investigator select a group of exposed individuals and a group of non-exposed individuals, and then we follow them into the futures for the incidence of the disease or whatever the outcome you want to look for, the exposure and the outcome that you want to look for.
So how's the cohort study different from experimental studies such as randomized clinical trial?
In many respects, the principle of the experimental study, namely the randomized control trial, very similar to the principles of a cohort study. For example, both randomized control trials and cohort study make comparisons across the exposure group. Both of them follow the participant longitudinally, prospectively, and they monitor the outcome rate of a typical of more than one outcome. However, in the randomized control trial that I discussed before, usually we only look at one outcome. But in the cohort study, we can look at multiple outcomes, because for the randomized control trial, the type 1 error is limited at 0.05, if you remember that from the previous podcast. Again, both select the groups to achieve comparability or efficiency at the baseline, and then the proportion of the subjects in the study in each group do not reflect the general population, meaning we select the numbers of the subject at the beginning of the study. Nonetheless, there are some key differences. If you recall, for instance, for the randomized control trial, the study investigators allocate the exposure themselves, meaning they randomize these subjects into whether they will receive the intervention or not. This randomization is a key because it will allocate both the unknown bias and the known bias equally across the group. However, in the cohort study, the subject chose the exposure themselves, meaning we do not randomize them. Yeah, so for the cohort study, the unknown and known bias might or might not be allocated equally between the group.
So how would you design a cohort study?
Well, there are multiple ways to design a cohort study. It can be both prospectively and retrospectively. For a classical prospective cohort study, that the one that we are discussing in this podcast, it will be a prospective cohort study. In this classical cohort study design, the investigator will define two or more groups of people that are free of disease at the beginning of the disease, and then the group has to be different according to the exposure to the potential cause of the disease, and follow them in the future for the incidence of the, like for the disease developed. So simplify this. They pick the investigator will pick two or more group of subjects that are different in their exposure and follow them into the future for the incident of the outcome. Then they will determine the relationship of the exposure to the disease with regard to whether or how frequent the exposure is present. In each group, they will be quantified, and Dr. Chen later will discuss with us how we can quantify this relationship. And the key difference between this study and the experimental study, as mentioned above, is that the cohort study takes advantage of the fact that people will expose themselves to noxious, toxic substances through, like, let's say, their personal habits, for example, smoking or places of residence, if you want to design a lab toxicity study, for example. So in the cohort study, we allow the subject to expose to the toxic substance themselves. In contrast to the randomized control trial, the investigator will allocate, will make the subject expose to the intervention that they want to test, of course, pending the IRB approval. There are a couple of variations that can arise from a classical cohort study. For example, we can have a case control or case cohort study that I discussed in the case control podcast, but I just want to briefly mention them back again in this podcast. For example, for the case cohort study, if you assemble a large cohort, you can even get some case control out of that. Namely, you can decide a small case cohort study, but you assemble the cohort and then you pick a sub cohort to be used in future analysis. And then if the case arise from that sub cohort, you pick your control from whoever not developed the disease from that sub cohort. Another variation that you can get out of the big cohort study is the nested case control study that I also have been discussed this in the past. For the nested case control, meaning that you conduct your case control study within a cohort study, and then you pick the control at the sample of individuals who are at risk for the disease in the cohort, not in the sub-cohort, each time that the disease develops. So the difference between nested case control and case cohort study is that in case cohort study, you pick a sub-cohort, and that serves as your population. In the nested case control study, the entire population in your big cohort study serve as your population.
So is there any fundamental assumption for cohort design?
Well, as you know, that in any research study, there must be some assumption that need to be true in order for us to reach a valid conclusion. For a cohort study, it is very, very important for the subjects in the research, in the cohort study, to be free of the disease, interested at the beginning of the disease. And additionally, they must be at risk for developing the disease. For example, if you want to study a cohort, a substance, let's say an intervention on prostate cancers, you cannot pick a woman in your cohort study because they are free of the disease, but they are not at risk for the developing of prostate cancer. So it's not a valid study if you put in women as your subjects in the cohort design. So two fundamental that you need to remember when you design cohort study. Number one, the subject has to be free of disease at the beginning of the study, and they have to be at risk throughout your period of follow-up of developing this disease.
What are the advantages of a cohort study?
Well, there are a couple of advantages of the cohort study. First, this is a prospective study. So as you know, that any prospective study can ensure temporality because it ensures the postulate cause is assessed before the occurrence of the disease. It's not like we look back and we claim that this effect, this exposure caused the disease. We follow them for the exposure and then they develop the disease. So it's prospective study always has an advantage of ensure temporality. It's also reduced selection and recall bias. By selection bias, I mean that the individual, the subjects in the study, different probability of being included in the study sample according to relevant characteristics, namely the exposure or the outcome. This cohort study, because we pick everyone, like a lot of people that are at risk for the disease and that they are free of the disease. So we reduce the selection bias. We don't include them in the study because they are higher risk or something for the disease. So the core study will reduce the selection bias and with the recall bias, which may be a problem if you do a case control study. If you recall the recall bias, I mean that the error occurs when the subject in the study did not recall correctly his or her exposure. So for the case control, if you ask the subject, because the subject already developed the disease, if you ask the subject whether he or she got exposed or not, he or she might have recalled the exposure incorrectly. However, in the cohort study, because you follow them up prospectively, you will reduce a lot of recall bias. And also, a cohort design study will allow us to study multiple outcomes at the same time. For example, if you follow a group of patients for your cohort study, you can, for smoking, for example, you can check the outcome for lung cancers, esophageal cancers, oral cancers, multiple outcomes at the same time. This gives you the advantage over the randomized control trial. Is that because randomized control trial, you can only look at one single outcome for one clinical question at one time. For cohort study, you can look at multiple outcomes with multiple questions using one cohort study. And because prospectively, you have the follow-up time, you can also estimate the incidence of the disease in the population. So you can get multiple things, multiple results out of one single cohort study.
What about disadvantages?
So for the cohort study, you reduce the selection bias, you reduce the recall bias, you also ensure the temporality, you can also study multiple outcomes at the same time. However, we need to have some mechanism to ensure the high follow-up rate to make sure that this cohort design has high internal validity. If you lose a lot of patients to follow up, that means you already induce some of the selection bias in your study. So the difficult thing for the cohort study is that we need to choose the populations that are well-defined, and it is possible to gain access to the data through a centralized sources, and we need to minimize the loss of follow-up. And usually the cohort study, they are big study, they are study for a long time. It might be also very expensive comparing to the case control study. And the cohort study also take a lot of time because you need to wait for the people to develop the outcome you are looking for. So it might take years before you can get some results out of the cohort study, in contrast to the case control study that you can do quickly because you already sample a group of the patient with the disease. So each of the design have their own advantage and disadvantage, and depending on your clinical questions, you will pick your own appropriate study design. So that is the brief summary of how you develop and how you design a cohort study, as well as its disadvantages and advantages. So, Dr. Chen, after we design our cohort study, what measure of association can we obtain from this design?
To quantify the association, we can get relative risk, risk difference, and odds ratio from cohort studies. Relative risk, or risk ratio, is the ratio between the probability of developing a disease in the exposed group and the probability in the comparison non-exposed group. And risk difference is the difference between two probabilities.
So, Dr. Chen, if I recall correctly from our previous podcast with you, you mentioned that in the case control study, the odds ratio is the only appropriate measure of association for a case control study. So, as physician, I don't want to have too many measures of association to remember. So, can we use odds ratio for cohort study? Or the risk measurement that you mentioned previously, the risk difference and the relative risk, are they better than the odds measurement that you mentioned in the case control study?
Yeah, of course we can. Although odds ratio is most commonly used in case control studies, it can also be obtained from cross-sectional and cohort study designs. In clinical studies, the parameter of greater interest is often relative risk rather than odds ratio. We just went through the definition of relative risk. For odds ratio, let's review the definition of odds first. Odds is the probability of an event occurring in one group divided by the probability of the event not occurring in the same group. An odds ratio is the ratio between the odds from the two groups with different exposure status in cohort studies or with different disease status in case control studies. Based on the definition, relative risk is more straightforward to quantify the effect of exposure on disease status. When we're investigating rare diseases, odds ratio approximates relative risk. However, when the rare disease assumption doesn't hold, for example, if we are studying diabetes, odds ratio is no longer a good approximation, and it can overestimate the true relative risk.
So that's a chance. So apparently, the relative risk or the risk difference is more of a direct measurement of the risk of the exposure over the disease. And the odds ratio seems to be more of an indirect measurement because it's only approximate the relative risk in when the rare disease assumption holds. So I assume that for your case control study, you can run some regression because, as you know, that the outcome might not only depend on one exposure, it might also depend on multiple exposure. So do we have any similar regression model that we typically use for cohort study that we can assess multiple exposures for the outcome?
Yes, we do. If all subjects in the study are observed for equal observation period, we can do simple tabular analysis to estimate relative risk. However, if unequal observation period or loss to follow-up occurred, in other words, follow-up time are different, tabular analysis is no longer appropriate. If we have person time recorded, we can apply survival analysis with nonparametric approaches such as Kaplan-Meier or life table methods, or we can apply parametric approaches such as exponential regression model or a semi-parametric approach such as Cox model.
So you mentioned to us and the listeners a lot of technical words like Kaplan-Meier, Cox proportional hazard, semi-parametric approach. I'm sure many of us who are the listener might already forgotten those technical details from our biostatistics class in medical school or in college. So can you explain to us more about the differences between Kaplan-Meier and Cox proportional hazard model, because we see these terms occur quite frequently in the medical literature?
Yes, sure. Kaplan-Meier method has some limitations. It can't model continuous variables directly, and it's not sufficient to demonstrate that one group has a longer mean survival time than the other with statistical significance. In cohort study, we're interested in how a risk factor modifies survival experience relative to not having the risk factor. We don't really care much about the baseline hazard. So that's why semi-parametric approaches without specifying the baseline hazard is appropriate in the cohort study. Unlike exponential regression model, Cox model allows the hazard rate to be constant as a Cox proportional hazard model, or it allows the hazard rate to vary depending on time as a Cox non-proportional hazard model.
Oh wow, it seems that the statistics are getting more and more complicated for this study design. And there's a lot of technical detail that we have covered in this podcast. As a statistician physician, Dr. Chen, can you give us a quick summary of the design of the cohort study and what a statistical inference that we can get from this research design?
In a prospective cohort study, two or more groups of disease-free people that are similar except for exposure status are selected and followed into the future for disease status. Relative risk and other measures of association are used to analyze risk factors.
So it seems that there are a lot of several key similarities and between the case control and the cohort study that you mentioned before. And can you tell us about the key differences that we need to look between them when we read the literature so we do not confuse the case control and the cohort design if the author did not tell us. In reality, they probably told us already in the methods and design section. But what are the key differences between them that we need to keep in mind?
Case control studies are usually for rare diseases. And in case control studies, sampling is based on disease status. Those with the disease are cases, and those without are controls. Exposure status is then compared between cases and controls. As opposed to cohort study, sampling is based on exposure status. For a measure of association, we can get odds ratio of exposure in case control studies, and relative risk, risk difference, and odds ratio of disease from cohort studies. Selection, information, and confounding bias exist in both study designs, and no real population prevalence can be obtained from the two study designs.
Okay, so it seems that in medical and epidemiological research, there are three major designs that can help us to provide with evidence to support our clinical practices. Namely, they are randomized controlled trial, cohort study, and case control study. The differences and the advantage and the disadvantage of each of the individual design that we have been discussed over the past three podcasts, including this one, and we hope that the listener will understand more about these three major research design, and then when they read the medical literature published on the result of these design, they will be able to draw the appropriate statistical inference conclusions from the data they publish in order to know which result they should implement to change their clinical practice. So we have the listener an overview of how to design the trial as well as simplify the statistical method that they commonly use in each of the design. In the next podcast, Dr. Chen has been agreed to give us another one to help us to understand the basic statistical tests, the indication on when to use them, as well as the appropriate inference that we can obtain from each of the statistical tests, because the amount of medical literature is growing every day, and in each of the publication, they always talk about all of these statistical tests that some of you might or might not be familiar with, and it gets more and more complicated as we are moving into the future. So Dr. Chen will give us a short summary in the next podcast of each of these tests.
Yes, sure. You will become more familiar with all the statistical terminologies next time.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Chen, for giving us a wonderful review, and we are looking forward to talk with you all next podcast.
Thank you for having me. See you next time.
Thank you.